It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, March the 1st, 2026. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, NoG, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, and come join me at TheTalkingMetsPodcast.com, official website, chat for free, updates on the show. You can interact with me all at TheTalkingMetsPodcast.com. And I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. And don't forget some premium content, extra innings, over at our Substack. Of course, you could also get that over at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. March is here. Actually starting to feel like spring here, a little bit New York. I use that term very loosely. When you've been dealing with the freeze that we've been under and the snow and the dreary winter, you hit a 50-degree day and some sun, and all of a sudden you're starting to feel the itch of spring and the itch of baseball, less than a month away from opening day. And a big show for you here today. We finally got some spring training action underway. We got about a week or so of games. Joining me, he was live at Port St. Lucie a week ago. Friend of the show. Everybody loves him. Most asked about guest all the time. Everybody always says you got to bring him on. Joining me in just a little bit is Ernie Dove. Ernie had a chance to join me right before the Mets took on the Astros today. Had a chance to talk to him about the pitching, the offense, prospects, coaching. We went through the gamut. And I think that as I set the whole show up here, I think that's the theme, because one of the things through the first week of spring training, and I did not partake in anything about Bo Bichette's videos in warmups, ground balls at third base, or worrying about Polanco, or worrying about any of the veterans on offense. Really what I was looking for, and I always look for when I'm watching spring training games, and I try to consume them mainly in short spurts, hard to really sit there for a full game. I haven't yet, watching clips here and there, reading recaps, reading what's going on. Obviously having guys like Ernie Dove out there helps out a lot. Really hard, to get into these games. I'm a guy that likes the juice of the action, of the regular season action, of games that count. But, you know, I do like to see what some of the pitchers are doing, and obviously the up-and-coming prospects. As I said at the beginning of spring, it's a big spring for Carson Benj. It's a big spring, obviously, for some of these young pitchers, like a Jonah Tong. We'll see when Christian Scott starts the pitch. The bullpen competition. Obviously, some guys going to the WBC. You got Nolan McClain and his dominant performance. And then you always have some kind of out-of-the-blue performance by a veteran or a kid. Robert Stock was that guy. We wrote about him over at Extra Innings. But what I really like to do, and what I've seen over the last week, and I think this is so important when it comes to any ball club, particularly a ball club that's trying to compete for a playoff spot, trying to get to the promised land, trying to win a championship, is look at the kind of depth that they have. And over the years, one of the biggest things that's derailed the Mets, and particularly if you go and look at history, we always try to do that here at the Talking Mets podcast. We always try to look at history. We try to look at prior Mets teams, teams that were expected to win that fell short. And usually it's always pinned on one or two of the stars, or you'll talk about failures at different critical points, and that's fair. But always when you look at a team that falls apart or falls short or didn't achieve what you wanted, it's about the depth on the roster. And a perfect example of how depth can come back to bite you typically is those Omar Minaya teams back at 06, 07, 08, particularly in 07, 08, when they faded down the stretch and they would miss the playoffs by a game or two. And you could point to various times of the season where they would have to bring up a scrap heap guy, or were a little short in the bullpen, or were a little short even on the positional player roster. Maybe they were slightly short in the lineup. And some of that had to do with the fact that they didn't have the depth. They didn't have the depth to swing a trade. They didn't have the depth to plug in young kids at various positions. And as you watch the Mets, and this is going to be a big part of my conversation with Ernie Dove, and I think both AJ Ewing and Carson Benge have really started to spark and got my imagination going forward this summer to possibly a competition, possibly a controversy, putting a lot of, I mean, the way you've seen just in a small sample size of Benge working the count, Benge's arm in the outfield, AJ Ewing making you dream of him possibly being some sort of hybrid between Brett Butler and Kenny Lofton. Go, if you don't like those comps, if I'm dating myself with those comps, go look them up on Baseball Reference. Giving you that component of the offense that this team really has never had. Maybe the only time they've had it at some point was Jose Reyes. And to a large degree, Jose Reyes never achieved that high on base percentage type of game on offense that maybe would have helped him be even a greater player at his peak. And then you see Luis Robert and how you're hoping that with the fact that he's with a good team, the fact that he's got Juan Soto to his right out there in the outfield, someone that he could really look up to, Mets trying to work on keeping him healthy, a guy that at least in a small sample size for one season gave you 30 home runs, possible 30-30 guy, gold glove defense, a guy that if he struggles or if he has these periods during the season where he's not the Luis Robert Jr. that you hope you see from 2023, but more the version that the White Sox saw the last couple of years, you've got an A.J. Ewing potentially at Syracuse starting to make you wonder, hey, do you make the move to the kid? These are kind of conversations that, in the past, if the Mets brought in a Luis Robert Jr., they had to ride him out. Who knows? I mean, A.J. Ewing, he may, as he plays this spring, make you even wonder if he should break camp. Now, that's not going to happen, but he'll make you wonder. And then you look up and down, you know, some of the arms that have competed this week, Ryan Lambert, a young arm. You've heard a lot about a Ben Simon. I mean, shoot, Robert Stock goes out there, and I know he's over there on X talking about AI, talking about analytics, talking about his app, and Mets fans may briefly remember how he made a couple of unsuccessful starts during Cohen's first season as owner in 2021 when they were shuttling a lot of, you know, Jeremy Eichhoff types. And think about that. Think about how the Mets that year had to shuttle so many different foray at the end of the rope veterans to fill starts. And they missed out on the postseason. There was a lot of reasons, but that was part of it, having some of these bad pitching performances. And now you could just dream. And I know Winiger pitched today, and he had a shaky second inning, but you've got a Jack Winiger. You've got a Christian Scott. You've got a Jonah Tong. You've got six starters. You actually have a debate, Ron Darling debating, whether they need to send a starter to the bullpen to start the season versus going with the six-man rotation. I mean, think about that. Now, this is less than it's a few months after this team spiraled in the second half, had 3 to 4 inning Little League starts, was thin on the pitching, had to rush Tong up, had to rush McClain up, had to rush Brandon Sproat, who's now in Milwaukee, up. And here you are just a few months later talking about, hey, which one of these guys is not going to make the rotation? And again, if you're not optimistic at this time in spring, you're never going to be optimistic all year. Give it a couple of weeks, maybe an injury, maybe something happens, maybe you start to settle in where you're not necessarily seeing these guys face 4A talent, or let's face it, not even 4A talent, talent that's never going to make it to the big leagues, and your attitude will change. But up in town, as you look at this 40-man roster, and even the guys like a Chris Suero, who hit a home run today, someone who's starting to push himself into the conversation as a top prospect with power, versatility, a catcher, an outfielder. You're starting to see that, and I don't know if all these guys will be stars. We're not saying that, but you may have legitimate contributors. Tyrone Taylor is going to be a free agent. How great would it be next year if the Mets have an outfield where you have Nick Morabito as your backup, you have Benge in right, maybe A.J. Ewing in center, Soto in left. I mean, I'm not saying just send Luis Robert on his way. You know, he's got an option. But maybe you actually have a reason to either not pick up Robert's option or trade him or whatever. And I'm speaking like a lot really ahead of it. And look, I want Robert Jr. to be successful. But let's face it, there's a lot there to be concerned about based on the recent history. The point is, the Mets are not relying necessarily on Robert Jr. regaining his form. They may have options. And we haven't even talked about Jacob Reimer or Ryan Clifford, two top offensive prospects that decisions are going to have to be made over the next 6 months because they need to be added to the 40-man roster by December or they're Rule 5 eligible. I mean, think about the bullpen. Here we are, five slots already taken in the bullpen and how good Tobias Myers has looked in his small sample size so far this spring. You've got Devin Williams, Luke Weaver, Brooks Raley, Luis Garcia, and Tobias Myers. And maybe you have two. Maybe you have three, depending on how they go. Maybe they go five starters. Maybe another guy gets slid from the rotation into the bullpen. But regardless of what happens, because none of those starters outside of McClain have options, the Mets have a couple of openings for the bullpen. Brazenbone, we believe, has an option. That's what Fangraph says. We haven't seen Brian Hudson, the lefty, yet. Right now, you know, Craig Kimbrell, the veteran, is in the mix at this point. Austin Warren on the 40-man roster in the mix. Ryan Lambert's, you know, surprised us with a great outing. Heard nothing but good things. We'll see what Ernie Dove has to say about him. And we haven't even talked about Dylan Ross. We haven't even talked about Dylan Ross yet. So, you know, here we are talking about Robert Stock and his six strikeouts. So, again, we might be getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. We might be overly optimistic. And it's not necessarily impressive when you're seeing a guy throw 98 against some minor leaguers, but you have to take what's in front of you. And right now, the Mets are, from an arms perspective, showing you a lot of reasons to be excited. They got some interesting top of the prospect list offensive players, Ewing and Benj standing out among them. And we haven't even got to see a lot of Suero. We haven't got to see much of Ryan Clifford yet. I know he's played a little bit. Jacob Reimer hasn't really stood out yet. I mean, there's a lot of interesting things that are going on. So depth is going to be something that, for the first time, and if you look at the transaction wire today, the Mets sent Alex Carrillo down. They sent Anderson Severino down and Matt Turner. Now, Severino and Turner are a couple of scrap heap guys and actually look pretty good. And in the past, these are guys that probably would hang around late into spring because they had a legitimate shot at making the roster. I mean, even with what Robert Stock put together as a veteran, and maybe at 36 years old, and all the work he's done on learning pitching from an analytics side, maybe he puts out a really good performance this spring and makes you think, hey, do we give him that veteran spot, force him onto the 40-man instead of Kimbrel? You know, there's going to be guys that are not going to sniff a roster spot, or not going to sniff the big leagues because the Mets just don't have room for them. You actually may see at the end of spring the Mets lose some veterans that I'm not saying are going to be big-time difference makers, but are probably in the past arms that you wouldn't want to lose, or you would say, how can they just let them walk because they have so many options? Now, options start to dwindle as injuries mount, performances level out, and talk to me, you know, the old, you know, Mike Francesa, talk to me in August. Talk to me in August where this is all at, you know, post-trade deadline and what have you. But you have to feel really good right now about some of the early returns on depth. Even a Tyrone Taylor, another home run today. How big would it be if Taylor, who's had in the past some offensive success, more so with Milwaukee than with the Mets, but if you could get him as a righty bat to spell if Benj does make it in right field, or even Mike Talkman, and I know Mike Talkman, you know, good spring debut with a bomb earlier in this spring. I think he's going to push Benj. It'll be interesting how that final roster spot for the positional side goes. We've been talking about it. We've talked about Brujan maybe making it. It looks like Kessinger is going to have a serious hamstring injury. He's out. Arroyo's still in the mix. I don't know if Lindor makes it, if the Mets will be inclined to take another middle infielder like a Ronnie Mauricio. Look, somebody, whether it be Mauricio or Benj, I don't think that they would trade Vientos. I know he's hit the ball hard. He hasn't had a lot of success this spring. I don't think they would trade Vientos. I don't think any of the other catchers, the Rotverts and some of the other veteran catchers that they've been bringing on board here, Barnes and Senger and guys like that, I don't think that they're going to be brought on as the third catcher. I think they're just depth, and I don't know how long some of the veterans will even stay in the organization. But right now, let's assume that the original thought was that Lindor could make it back for opening day. Mendoza confirmed that today, a report out there on MLB.com by Mark Feinsand. And if you look at that, you have to think Mauricio maybe gets sent down to play every day, whether it be third base, shortstop, wherever, hone his game, possibly be the first to be called up, maybe a big trade chip come the deadline. you know, possibly Talkman gets a spot. I don't know if you would take both Talkman and Benj. I still think Benj, you know, unless he has, and he's had a good start, unless he continues to push his way onto the roster relentlessly all spring, I feel like they're going to give him some time, even if it's a month, down in AAA to hone it, make sure he's ready, make sure all the things that could go wrong are going to be all worked out. Any kind of, you know, they had a rough time down there at AAA at the end of last year. And then maybe by May 1st, say, hey, we've seen Talkman. We've seen about what Tyron Taylor has. Who knows what kind of injury pops up. Let's see what Robert Jr. is all about. And then you have a better feel about bringing Benj up. Yeah, there's some service time benefits there. I think that's why he has to make it. No doubt. Just like Pete Alonso in 2019. No doubt that he belongs on that roster. So that give the Mets no reason to even play, even if it's a legitimate reason to send him down, the service time game. And then you watch him. You watch A.J. Ewing. You watch a Jonah Tong. You watch a Christian Scott. You watch a Jack Winiger. There's Will Watson. And I'm probably missing Jonathan Santucci. You watch these young arms that could possibly bring the Mets 10 or 11 deep before they even have a Carl Edwards or somebody who's a scrap heap arm to be called upon in a certain spot if there's a serious injury or if there's actually a need for a starter more than just a spot start here or there. So a lot of exciting things on the depth front. That was my takeaway from week one of spring training. What is Ernie Dove's takeaway? He was down in Port St. Lucie. He's a guy that's got his pulse on the organization. He talks to tons of people in player development, coaches, front office types, players, family members. Ernie is clued in. There's nobody better to talk about the Mets organization as a whole. Don't think of him just as prospects. That's his big thing. He walks around with his shirt, prospect hugger. We get it. But think about Ernie giving you a real vibe on what the Mets organization is all about, where they're at, what they're good at, what they're not, and what people think about it. So we're going to hear from Ernie Dove. Does he agree with me? Does he agree with my thoughts on depth and some of the players that I'm excited about? We'll talk about that and more right after this. We're back, and joining me, first guest that was live in Port St. Lucie, while I'm sitting back here in New York, braving the weather, shoveling 30 inches of snow. He's having fun in the sun, talking to Mets luminaries, big leaguers, prospects. And like I told him in the green room, we do have a little green room here, virtual green room at the Talking Mets podcast. He is by far, believe it or not, this is not a joke, the most asked for guest on the Talking Mets podcast. It's the great, not the good, the great Ernie Dove. Ernie, how are you? You're back. Well, you're in Florida, so you never got back into anything, but you're out of spring camp and now it's back to reality. How was your time covering the team in Port St. Lucie in early spring training?
I mean, it's been fun. And now I obviously don't want to make it worse by talking about how hot it's been and making sure my sunscreen is on in the 80-degree weather plus every day. But yeah, things are good. I'm kind of living the dream in camp this time around with the full media credentials. So it's been a blast.
So early, and let's start anecdotally, because that's always the fun part. Anecdotally, after a tough end of the season, tough off season till about January, late January, how are the vibes around Mets land? You know, when you're at camp at this time of the year, there's a little bit more of the hair down. The fans have a little bit closer proximity to the players in Port St. Lucie during workouts. You have to be positive in spring training, especially in early spring training. But how are the vibes after what really was a tough, from like July onward till about February, a really tough time to be around this team on in any front?
I mean, it's different, obviously, a little bit because of the players. Even for spring purposes, even from last year and this year, you don't have as much fan access last spring and this spring, got to be honest. Some of the morning routines, afternoon workouts, a lot of the top players are not hands-on available in the backfields like they used to be. So even that's a little bit different from a professional and fan standpoint. But the players themselves, it seems like pretty good vibes. Everybody, they have new things like this chess club inside the clubhouse. And obviously for someone like myself, the exciting part is you've got so many top rated prospects that are all upper minor level, AA, AAA, quasi MLB ready, ETA 2026. they're all in camp now at the same time with these veterans. So it's not just like, hey, Dove's looking about the kids. These kids could be four, five, six, seven of them can debut in 2026. It's kind of wild that they're all ranked and ready.
And what I think the early returns, and look, I love Pitch Profiler. I love all these analytics that pop up here at this time of the year. But remember, some of this stuff is happening against guys that'll never sniff a big league ball club. Let's remember that. But I think the big takeaway early, and I think the fans are starting to see it here, about 2 years into the Stearns president of baseball operations, the Stearns regime, whatever you want to call it, you're starting to see some talent coming up, not just the Benjes and the Ewings and McClain and those big names, but a Ryan Lambert, Dylan Ross. There's even some names down the list at bullpen arms, potential starters down the line. And when you go, I mean, look, this is publicly available data. You go to Fangraphs. One of the biggest challenges this organization is going to have is they're going to have to make some tough decisions. And we've talked about this. You talked about this after the deadline when people were screaming about all the prospects they traded. There are certain guys, big names, Ryan Clifford, Chris Suero, Jacob Reimer, who have to be on the 40-man come December. So the next 6 months are going to be critical. And let's face it, this is a team trying to make the playoffs. This is a team trying to win a championship. And not every one of these guys is going to be able to make their hay in the next 6 months. So they're teeming with talent. And I want to warn everybody, there's going to be some veterans that go north because they don't have to put these kids on the roster. So it's going to be interesting the next couple of weeks because I think there's going to be some kids. I think Lambert's name comes up as one of them that I think deserve a spot, but I don't think are going to make it up north because I think you want to play the long game with these kids on many fronts.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you got the certain names. Everyone's now excited about Ryan Lambert, who I reported weeks ago making videos about how he was already throwing 100 in that player development camp that they had in January. So there he is throwing 99 plus, and now everyone's seeing what I was reporting at that time. And there are other guys, even the Ben Simon, Brett Banks just pitched again for the second time. Then there's Dylan Ross, of course, Benj. But now everyone too is now being greeted to the one and only AJ Ewing, who I've been reporting on all last year. Even talking to him in camp, he did bulk up a little bit because some of the concerns with him was like physical power. He did bulk up, put on some muscle weight. So that was pretty exciting to see visually. And then Chris Suero is just, you look at this young man, all you see is a smile first. You can't even recognize him through the smile. He's just full of energy and happiness. He looks like an Alvarez type leader energy just by being in his presence. So it was really cool to meet him face to face for the first time. But there's just so much going on. And that, as I've been telling you and my fans, since Stearns took over, he completely overhauled player development for hitters and pitchers. The hitters have more of a do damage stuff, the different approach to hitting. The pitchers keep changing pitches, grips. Now they're into the cutter. This offseason, they moved to more of a hard slider with some of their minor league pitchers. More guys are learning the kick change. I believe Ryan Lambert now has a kick change. Some guys keep changing things based on player developments. Even the guys you know and love from last year, they already look different. As like a Jonah Tong now with his new cutter that everyone's trashing when he used once for like 10 pitches. But these are things that they're learning now, and it's all through the new resources and the development staff they have.
And what's expressive to me with these coaches, and I think that's one of the biggest things that fans reach out to me and ask, like, what's the deal with these coaches? Because that was a big part of the offseason. Justin Willard, and sometimes with coaches, they come in and they have like this marketing. They're the guru of this and they're the guru of that. And it's not like that. There's nobody who has a magic wand. But what I really liked about a Justin Willard is how he talked about one simple thing, and he used a corny term, a superpower. And using that superpower to throw in the zone. And this is an organization, and I'm not, and I like Jeremy Hefner. I was surprised he got fired, and he clearly got a job quick, like I predicted. But this is an organization at various points in the last 5 years that has walked too many batters, whether it be in the bullpen in 2024, which a lot of fans don't realize, OMG was almost undone by bad bullpen, and in the starting rotation last year. The walks are too high. And is that part of a pitch selection? Is that part of a philosophy? Is that the type of pitchers they had? And then we'll talk on the offensive side. Everybody's curious about Jeff Albert. Jeff Albert now is kind of like the CEO of hitting, even though you have Troy Snicker and what have you. So talking about those two guys, sometimes we overrate coaches. I thought last year we overrated, or I thought they overrated the issues with the hitting coach. But from a young player perspective, maybe I was wrong. Maybe Lindor doesn't need to worry about the hitting coach, and maybe Freddy Peralta doesn't have to worry about the pitching coach. But there's a lot of guys that maybe need that right now.
Yeah, and I know the in the last week or so pregame, a question was asked to Carlos Mendoza about what are your thoughts on having like 20 hitting coaches as a staff? And he kind of talked about the benefits of that form of coordination and information sharing. So the obvious important thing to do now, especially with the hitting staff, is to really have good communication, which you could say about a lot of things in life, but Mendoza really put the point on it. Specifically to the hitting staff, not even hitting coach. It's pretty interesting. Now, from the pitching coach side, a lot of it too is about relationships. That's why I've been hyping the same guy all offseason since he got the promotion, the new assistant pitching coach, Dan McKinney. Like, I'm not joking. In these 2 years that he's been employed by the Mets, he's pretty much worked with every single top pitching prospect in the Mets organization. Even though he coached two different affiliates, I believe it was High A and Double A last year. He still did stuff in off seasons and springs. He's worked with every pitcher from low A to triple A. So it's pretty exciting the relationships that he has. And I've seen behind the scenes privately, I've seen him sitting in the stadium seat next to one of the top pitching prospects in the Mets organization. They're just chilling pregame, talking about something like these type of relationships and strengths that they're now building through their coaching staff. Hopefully, it's going to even continue to benefit everyone involved, including the Mets team.
Are there other coaches throughout the organization that you see similar to McKinney who is starting to get recognized, obviously, with a promotion that maybe we should keep an eye on that are potential solutions to this staff or maybe the next hot commodity?
I mean, there's some even lower level stuff. There's a Devin DeYoung, the hitting coach. He was the hitting coach for St. Lucie last year. He has a version of a promotion. I believe he's now the hitting coach for High A, Brooklyn. And there was a guy, an assistant below him, I think, that another guy that could be one of those long-term guys. But even our new first base coach was a Gilbert Gomez. He was highly, highly, highly regarded in the Mets organization between the players and the relationships again. So those are kind of guys that might be around for a while. And a guy like Devin DeYoung is one of those guys who was kind of recruited and hired by the new-ish staff that's come in. So, these guys, I want my guys. So that's one of those things, like you say, with a coaching staff, it could take a while, even in year two for stuff like Stearns. We're now building the staff that he wanted, and those guys are bringing who they want. And so things are looking really good right now in during this transition. And finally, hopefully, knock on wood, they actually have some stability from the front office to the coaching staff. It'd be nice to have that for a few years.
I want to get to Benjamin Ewing before we get to the arms because I know everybody wants to talk about the arms, but I think Ewing has thrown a little bit of a monkey wrench, in my opinion, into the outfield conversation, at least in the long term of the year, not coming out of the camp. But would you've seen with Benj how quickly he's risen through the organization, and Ewing, who 2 years ago nobody even knew his name, and here he is. I mean, I could tell you if this kid gets some power, and he is who we think he could be. I mean, is it unfair to compare him to a Kenny Lofton type hitter? I understand that's a near Hall of Famer. I know that I'm using a lot of superlatives here, and I'm talking, very, optimistically here on March 1st. But is that the Jeff Albert impact? Because he's been in the organization a couple of years. This is not a newbie. Is that his impact? And what is that if that is the case?
I mean, I probably have a pro coaching and player bias on this, but I have spoken one-on-one with AJ Ewing. Before one of the spring games, and he did mention the weight gain that he put on. Not a huge weight gain, but could maybe not the Ronnie Mauricio weight gain or the Jeff McNeil when he put on 25 pounds of muscle. But AJ Ewing did pack on some weight in the offseason. And one really interesting thing that he told me when I was talking to him, and I had it in one of my recent videos on the New York Mets Dove Report, AJ Ewing said one of the keys to my success was my failure in 2024. And the reason why a lot of us minor league junkies weren't reporting and hyping AJ Ewing in 2024 is because he hit about 200. So AJ Ewing actually said, to be honest, I feel that was a strength and I'm glad I went through that season because it helped kind of, put me down to the level of truly understanding pro baseball. one of those natural things, a high school kid who's great at everything, when you have that version of failure, it motivated him to no end. And that's how he absolutely exploded in 2025. But then also coaching staff, that's where it comes in. Again, they're changing his approach. They're utilizing his good plate approach. He's one of those in the zone type of hitters that knows what he's doing. They implemented some of the other stuff, even through the October, November winter camp that just occurred for the minor leaguers in this past offseason. One of the coaches told me how good he looked, and that coach told me, I think he's going to explode this year. And he told me that in like January. Here we are. So that's not me. I have to credit the real person who said it, even though I'm the one who posted it in a video, but they said this was coming.
And he was, if I remember correctly, he was a Willie. He was other teams were looking at him throughout the offseason when the Mets were trying to make some deals and things like that. When you look at the outfield situation, so you have Luis Robert Jr., a guy that maybe as he gets into his part of his prime, starts to worm his way back to that 30 home run, 20 home, 20 stolen base, gold glove defense type. We'll see. It's been a couple of years playing for a bad team. Sometimes getting out of a bad situation helps a guy getting into a good situation, a winning situation with a Hall of Fame ball player to his right and Juan Soto. But when you start to think of a very delicious scenario, you got Tyrone Taylor as your backup outfielder. You could have a scenario by midsummer, and I know that it's early, and I know I'm probably jumping the gun, where Benj is now playing every day, giving you. The comps have been, forget Kyle Tucker comps. That's crazy to put that out there now. What if he's like Nick Markakis, in prime Nick Markakis, hitting singles and line drives, 12 to 15 home runs? You have AJ Ewing in the minors putting up 50 stolen bases and getting on base, can play a couple of positions and even an infield position, I guess, in a pinch. He's played second base at some point. And then you have Nick Morabito, who probably can be your backup outfielder of the future, or maybe somebody could come off the bench in September and steal some bases and have him in the minors flanking here a little bit. So it's an exciting idea. And at some point, could we have a debate midsummer? Is it better to have the kids, especially if Luis Roberts in July is hitting a buck 62 and striking out? You know that's going to happen. I know I'm throwing out crazy scenarios, but both Morabito with his AFL performance and Ewing with his early spring platitudes, just from a few at bats, could make this a very interesting summer in the outfield.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting, especially when I even joked about it yesterday on social media. Like all of a sudden, the Mets have a bunch of outfield depth from their minor league contract, MLB camp invite guys, which again, to this day, it still seems a little surprising that Tauchman would just get a minor league deal. We know he's not a superstar or anything, but he's a legit veteran who you put him out there and he seems like a walking 350 on base percentage. And he's been doing what he's known as already in camp. And then you have like MJ Barry Bonds Melendez, who's
Yeah.
already hitting a couple of home runs. You even
Sure.
have Christian Pache all of a sudden, who has some hits.
Former, big time, he was a part of the wasn't he part of the Matt Olson deal, if you remember correctly? He was a
He's
big
one of
part
those
of it with Atlanta, right?
former
So,
top 100 prospects that are on the tour. So that's when people ask me as well, what should be the right projections, predictions? I'm literally the resident prospect hugger of Mets Twitter, but I would prefer that guys like Benj, even Tong, I prefer they all show up in AAA to break camp. I would want a guy like Tauchman to make it, or a Melendez if he continues to like look the way he looks now. Give the opportunities to the veterans because for better or worse, you have plenty of options with these rookies. There's no rush. I don't really want to worry about the service time with a guy like Benj because I mean, it is what it is. We're going to argue about the Alonso effect. Like, we had everything we can get out of Alonso, and they got him a second contract that we need to remember these
That one year,
years.
the year they got on the 1 year deal would have been that extra year of control if they kept him down 2 weeks at that
So,
point. Yeah.
which, again, it's very beneficial to do that, but I would prefer Benj break camp in AAA,
Yeah.
but not because of service time nonsense, just because you have a guy like Tauchman. If Luis Robert is healthy, then yeah, I would put the rookies, leave them in AAA, which they need to get more experience anyway, because it's a 162 game season. We all know what's going to happen, Robert jokes aside. Things are going to happen. You may need all these guys. You may even need AJ Ewing by late summer, depending on what's
Sure.
going on. But otherwise, if there is a Morabito in Benj, maybe a guy like Morabito may need to already be Tyrone Taylor in 2026 in case
Sure.
anything happens to Tyrone Taylor in
Right.
2026. There's going to be backup plans, which is good because now the Mets have these guys. Morabito might be like the 2026 version of Luis Angel Acuña if it's really needed.
Sure.
So maybe that's another option. And again, AJ Ewing still plays about 10 to 15 games at second base last year. So if everyone keeps panning out, would you need him to be
Can
in?
he actually play the infield decently?
He can play second base. He's okay. The arm is there. You know about his speed, so that's good for range.
Right.
He can play the position, but how many guys are going to stay healthy? We'll find out, but it is kind of fun seeing all the depth, and we haven't even got into the ridiculous arms that are everywhere.
Yeah, we got to get to that. You know, what's funny about Morabito and Ewing, one last thing, when I look at these stolen base totals, and I understand we're in a new era with you can only throw over a couple of times. This is not 1986 anymore, and it's not Vince Coleman on the base paths, but forget that. I mean, when you see 70 stolen bases and you see what Morabito could bring. You think of like a Jose Reyes on the base paths. You think of the havoc these guys can create. And look, we don't know what Juan Soto's future is, but it sounded like the way Juan Soto's talking, he's got 40-40 on his mind at that point. He wasn't too far away. And just because Anton Richardson's down south now doesn't mean that the institutional knowledge he left just goes with them. It's not like that. It's not an NDA at that point or anything like that. So there you go. A couple of guys before we would move, because I think these are key parts of the roster. The veterans are the veterans. I mean, you were down there, you saw the veterans. I think you'd agree that the Bo Bichette third base thing, let's calm down a little bit there. But I was curious, seeing Brett Beatty play a little bit at first, he looked comfortable there. I wonder if that's where his future may lie, even though I thought he made tremendous strides at third base. I think it's a huge year for Alvarez on many fronts. Is he going to be a decent catcher that, you know, goes into hot streaks but always is leaving you wanting? Can he learn how to hit? Can he calm his emotions? I think sometimes he gets so amped up. I think of an at bat late last year against Duran in Philadelphia where he just swung from his heels in the ninth inning. It's like, and you knew, like, I could have pitched to him and thrown him a softball over the plate. He would have swung and missed. I think this is a big year for those two guys. And then where does Ronnie Mauricio fit? Maybe he starts the year as the starting shortstop temporarily if Lindor isn't ready. I kind of don't want to give up on him. He's got a good glove. He's got this tremendous talent, but he always seems to me as a guy that's going to profile better at 5 o'clock during batting practice than maybe in the game. What about those guys? This is a big year for all three. And for Beatty, it's a different type of role. For Alvarez, it's like stay healthy and do your thing. And then for Mauricio, it's like, where does he fit?
Yeah, I know. With obviously Ronnie Mauricio, aka Pedro Serrano,
Yup.
we know what we're supposed to worry about with him. And I know there's a lot of talk about, oh, he can't hit as a righty. He should just be a lefty. I do understand it. I'm not going to argue against something like that. But again, back in the day, aka the last time he was actually healthy for a full season, he hit about 250 as a right-handed batter in like 2023 in the minor leagues. So nothing special. I don't even think he broke 700 OPS as a split as a righty, but with all the power he has on the left side, you'll take 250 for a switch hitter on the other side. But again, the question is, for me, he came out of nowhere defensively. I didn't, back in low A, Ronnie
Gold
Mauricio.
glove. Like I you know, a friend of mine called me up and says, you know how good he is at third. I'm like, yeah, you know, he goes, Mike, look at those hands. And then I looked at the advanced metrics. I'm like, oh yeah. And then I started to watch a little closer the few times he played. I'm like, wow, he's real. I mean, I'm talking his analytics were in a small sample size, Matt Chapman level. I mean, that's not joking. Look at Baseball Savant. It tells you that the whole time.
Yeah, no, that's why I looked at that as well. Those plus minus things are in the high pluses at third base, and they were in the minus at short, which is what everyone was focusing on as well. But so he ends up being an above average third baseman. He'll be an okay second baseman. He's got like light tower power, as the old school term, from a left-handed side when they're throwing him fastballs. But what's the OBP ever going to be? And I've talked about it online, like, can Ronnie Mauricio mature into a version of Ahmed Rosario, who, by the way, is now having a 10-year career as a guy hitting 270 and up?
Yep.
And if he could be an Ahmed Rosario, but
Sure.
with 30 home runs, That would be incredible. But what's the maturity level? Or will Ronnie Mauricio always be a 290, 298 on base percentage guy who flames out because of that? It's going to be pretty interesting. But a guy like Brett Beatty, I joked about it or said it. Like, I thought he should have been the third baseman for the Mets in 2026. A little confusing to me how this has all been played out, considering how good he was in the second half. Are the Mets implying that it was a bit of a mirage? Because he was pretty much, I would think,
I
from
think.
metrics, WAR standpoint, old school slash line,
Yeah,
I
he was
think
solid.
he was a top three to five third baseman.
I think it comes down to Bichette was a hitter they needed, and Bichette could play third base. I mean, I think it comes down to that. I think that Beatty is a guy that, from a career perspective, I don't see the corners for him. I don't see right field, maybe left field. Right field, a whole different ball game. Can I see him play a decent first base? Look, Mike Schmidt played first base. And by the way, Mike Schmidt played a gold glove at times level first base. Now, I understand that's Mike Schmidt. He's a Hall of Famer. Jorge Polanco, I don't know if you have any thoughts on him. You know, I don't think an infielder who has good hands, good instincts, I think they could learn it. I mean, Todd Zeal played first base. Everybody thinks it's going to be like, and I love Mike, but when Mike Piazza moved over there, he's coming off an injury. He was older. I don't know if his head was into it. Look, thinking back, you just can't put a glove over there. I understand that, but and I mean, look at Rafael Devers. Hart wasn't into it, right? Or a terrible first baseman. But in general, I think an infielder with some good hands and instincts could play the position adequately. And I think Pete. I understand everybody's bashing Pete's defense. I don't think it was as bad as everybody made it out to be. I think it was bad in certain spots, but particularly on quick instinctual plays, he just didn't have that. He had to think a lot more. He had to be more mechanical, throws to the pitcher, bunts, things like that. But in general, I don't think the Mets were an 83-win team because of Pete Alonso playing first base. It's not a premium position. It's not a premium defensive position. So you have that. With the pitching, a lot of excitement, a lot of arms. It was brought up for the first time yesterday on the broadcast by Ron Darling. Should the Mets go with six starters? That doesn't even include Christian Stuckot, Jonah Tong, Jonathan Santucci, Jack Winninger, Will Watson. I am thinking one of those guys might be trade bait by the deadline if the Mets need something of significance. The Mets, you need about 10 to 12 starters to get through a season. If I look at it, the Mets have six, and maybe with Scott and Tong, two more that are ready tomorrow to start a game. And then you got Santucci, Watson, Winninger, maybe those guys later in the year. That brings you down to that brings you up to 11, right? And I haven't even counted a Carl Edwards who might be a bullpen a starter down in the minors, Brandon Waddell, assuming these guys go down to the minors aren't clipped at the end of spring training by another team. Exciting times on the arms front, huh? I mean, a lot of exciting times.
I mean, yeah, definitely. And I do agree with Ron Darling. Like, no offense, Mr. Kodai Senga, but in this, whatever year we're in at this point in your contract, we probably need to go ahead and have you pitch every fifth day like everybody else in Major League Baseball. It has to be the thing. They really should just go with a five man. I know there's always ways in the schedule anyway. That's why teams go with a five man, because there's always going to be some day off and it turns into a quasi six day off anyway.
Right.
So, and now that you have a Tobias Myers, now I don't want to, as usual, overthink spring training, but he was a talented guy who was above average a couple of years ago, now healthy. Can he be a guy as a swingman? He could be that sixth guy anyway, even when we don't even get into discussions about a Jonah Tong and even my thoughts on Jack Weininger. I would prefer that they went with a five-man rotation with a guy like Tobias Myers to jump in and be basically a huge upgrade over a Brazoban, that type of role. I would rather see a Tobias Myers in the small sample size based on what Brazoban's done for the Mets.
Yep.
So you have those type of options. I would like to see that, even in new age baseball or whatever. If they want to figure it out, good. But again, this isn't Ohtani. Ohtani pitches the every 7 days because he hits bombs every other day from another situation. So Senga's only a pitcher. Let him pitch every 5 days. Again, unless they want to do some swing thing every single week and figure it out with Tobias Myers. But then again, How does that affect the veteran arms or even younger arms? Let's say
Right.
Jonah Tong has to be in the rotation. Are you going to be confusing Jonah Tong every fifth day, every sixth day, every seventh day? Now you're going
Well,
to mess up the young
that's where
player.
it gets. You make a great point because I look at the rotation. If you do six guys, does Freddy Peralta want to pitch in a six-man rotation? Okay, Nolan McClain, maybe that'll help him with his innings. Okay, maybe that's good. I don't know about David Peterson. Walk year after this year, probably doesn't want to come out of the bullpen. He's one of the logical arms. He wasn't always great in the bullpen either. Clay Holmes, okay, there's your bullpen arm, could make the bullpen deeper. He's another guy that probably when he signed here said, hey, if I'm coming to be a starter, I don't want to be yo-yoed around. You don't know what kind of conversations are happening. Manaea was really good out of the bullpen, but I think that, does he want to go more than 5 days in between? The routine is what I guess. Now, you could create a schedule starting from opening day, and you have your guys that are 5 days rest. Regular 5 day man rotation rest. And then you have your sixers and you just dot them around. And then you have like periods where they're coming out of the bullpen. You could do that. It's hard, but it's not hard. Is that good for the organization? It can help, I guess, keep the starters' innings down. It can keep the bullpen, potentially keep the bullpen rested and prevent the need to shuttle. I hate the shuttle. I think it's bad for the minor leaguers. I think being in New York on Sunday, Syracuse on Monday, back in New York 7 days later after spending time bouncing around AAA, I don't think it's good for these guys. Yes, it's the job, but I don't think it helps them get any better. Though that's good enough for a guy who's looking to make a check that's like Robert Stock, who's 36 years old, and just use me, right? Not good for kids at that point. And let's face it, Ernie, you got two bullpen spots. If you do not take, if you throw another starter into the mix, then you could take, I guess, two more bullpen guys. Maybe that's part of it at that point, if you want to do that. I don't know if that's the right thing to do. And Mets haven't really committed one way or the other. That's the interesting part.
Yeah, even still, I know earlier in the beginning of spring training, when they had a presser with David Stearns, and the question was asked about six man, and he basically said what makes sense. He was almost Captain Obvious, like, well, let's wait and see when opening day happens. Let's see how many arms are actually
Sure.
still active on the 26 man, because if enough guys stay healthy, I almost think it implies he may almost have to go with a six man. Based on arm health. So I think it's still logical and able to happen. But let's wait and see how many guys by the end of this new month that we're finally in for Mets baseball, if they're all healthy, I could see a six man.
Absolutely. And let's not forget, you have some decisions to make. You got Craig Kimbrell. Who knows if, and it didn't look great yesterday. Adbert Alzolay, who I have some high hopes for, he'll probably start an extended spring and get some innings in. I think Brazenbaum has options. There's been some debate on that. Fangraphs says he has options. I'll go with Fangraphs. Tobias Myers has options, but it sounds like he's part of the five coming out at this point. And then you have the Lamberts, the Dylan Ross, who's already on the 40 man. Austin Warren's not a bad arm either. I know that's a vet. If he got a chance, you have some real decisions to make. And then I guess, Ernie, tying on that, does Christian Scott or Jonah Tong, similar to how Corbin Burns and Freddie Peralta and Brandon Woodruff got bullpen time in Milwaukee when Stearns was there, do they get at some point this year, hey, we're healthy, we're flowing, let's have Jonah Tong come out of the bullpen, let's have Christian Scott come out of the bullpen. And beef up rather than trade for a veteran arm. Can we get those guys coming in with some instruction? So they have a lot of arms. I think options are going to play into this. If you have options, I think you could maybe not start out. And then you have veterans like Kimbrel and AJ Minter coming back. And then you have Brian Hudson, who we haven't seen yet, who had a promising year. You're going to have some logjam there. You might lose a good arm too, a new good veteran arm at some point at the end of spring, early April.
Yeah, there's a lot of factors in play. Even with Christian Scott, yes, he's 100% healthy this season. When I talked to him in my interview with him too, one-on-one behind the scenes, he had mentioned this is the best physically that I've ever felt in pro baseball. So all the stuff he had to go through and the certain stuff and the surgeries and whatever's, he's now 100% ready to go. But here's the thing with Christian Scott. He's not ready to be a starting pitcher out of camp in April, minor league, major league. We talked about it. The Mets organization have him on a structured, very structured built innings building situation. So he may not pitch more than two innings-ish all of spring. So obviously, if he caps out at two innings, depending on the game situation in spring, I don't see how he breaks camp even in the Syracuse rotation. And even if he
No.
did, let's see if he's pitching three, four innings per start, because in the minor leagues, you can do that. So I think Christian Scott's going to be about an innings building situation. So if he arrives in Queens in 2026, I don't think he has a shot of being a starting pitcher in the rotation unless it's a Waddell situation. You have him coming up pitching three, four innings on purpose with a
I don't
plan
see
to have a
that.
piggyback.
Nah. I think if you see the shuttle for like a doubleheader or the bullpen's burnt. I think Waddell is a guy like that. Carl Edwards is a guy like that. You'll find a way to make that. I think Tong and Scott, when they get called up, they're up. I hope that's the case. And I can't see an organization like this doing that. It does create a very interesting competition where you're 6 weeks into the season and Senga's having another spell of bad mechanics. And I'm not trying to pick on him because it could be Peterson, it could be Manaea that gets slow out of the gate. And you're doing those 3 or 4 inning little league starts, and the rhetoric starts about I'm looking to find myself. Look, at this point, come May 1st, if Jonah Tong's blowing away AAA hitters, I'm not saying just dump Senga. You might have to banish him to the bullpen as some kind of like garbage time reliever because I don't think he's a guy you can rely on any kind of consistency out of the bullpen, right? In any kind of way of high leverage, it would have to be to eat innings on either side of the score. You just pull the trigger at that point. And then that begs the question. We talk about Scott and Tong. Scott's probably more of an option midsummer to be a real starter. Tong, we'll see how he develops. What are the next big arms? I mean, we keep hearing about Jack Weniger, right? I mean, maybe he slides above both. Will Watson, Santucci, are there n arms that we're not talking about? Both in the rotation, give us arms in the rotation and maybe the bullpen outside of Lambert and Ross that we're not talking about.
Yeah, I know for starters, obviously, I've been talking about Jack Weniger all offseason. I was hearing some incredible things, what he's doing in that player development camp in January, where he's already throwing 100 miles an hour. He was throwing about, what, 97 or so, 96 in the spring game, which is fine because the real key is doing it in the regular season. Don't worry about throwing 100 unless you're a guy like Lambert who's barely human. But the other guys, it's okay as a starting pitcher to throw 96-ish. In your early spring game. So Jack Weniger could be in the Mets rotation in 2026 at some point and not leave as well. You can use that moniker with Jonah, with Scott. You could also use it for Jack Weniger because if and when he arrives with good health and all the good stuff and vibes, he's not leaving. That's the impression I got. And that's just not me talking. That's teammates saying that he's ridiculous. So if he they could acknowledge who the top dog is, and that's why I have Jack Weniger as the number one pitching prospect now in the Mets organization, behind McClain and Tong, who still have the eligibility for prospect status.
They're more big leaguers, yeah. They're
Yeah.
more big leaguers at this
As
point.
far as the pen arms, again, we mentioned it, the guys behind Ross and Lambert. For me, Ben Simon, who's going to participate in the World Baseball Classic for Team Israel. My understanding, Simon was hitting 99 last year at the end of the year. I believe he was hitting at least 95, 96 in camp in the spring game. You have guys like Brett Banks, who I love, but he's on a lower level. He's missed a lot of time since entering pro ball, and there's concerns about Brett Banks' pitch command that he's aware of. So he may break camp in double A, so that could be a while for him. My favorites forever include Saul Garcia, who we've seen a couple of times already in spring. He is my version of Jerry's Familia if things can go enough ceiling-wise. Because Saul Garcia's slider is a major leaguer. I just don't know if he's going to throw enough strikes, although I've said online he had a really good winter ball with his best walk rate of his pro career this past winter. How does that translate winter ball to minor league, triple A, upper minors, major league games? That's something to find out. And even a Douglas Orellana keeps getting squeezed, forced into a game now and then a couple of times. He's only been a filler in spring so far, but Douglas Orellana also has filthy, disgusting stuff with the command and consistency issue. Are guys like Garcia and Orellana going to randomly show up during the year as needed? And fans are going to be like, who the heck is this? And then when they start doing two strikeout innings, they're going to find out.
And we haven't even talked about Pintaro or Carrillo, who made some debuts last year. Not as exciting. I mean, I didn't see a lot out of either that made, but small sample size, right? But some people like them too. You get a vibe, and I hate to do this. Again, I'm using a lot of very unlike me. I don't like to, make a big deal. Like I'm a prove it guy. Yeah, we could talk about all the, hey, this guy's a demon. Look at this pitch plus, stuff plus thing. But again, the vibe or the feeling, talking to you, listening, watching, looking at analytics, you got a 2011, 2012 pitching vibe, a Wheeler, a Matz, a DeGrom. We didn't know DeGrom was going to be great coming up. We didn't know that. Harvey, look, everybody knows Matt Harvey's the Dark Knight. I lived it. Matt Harvey was as much considered coming up through the minors a possible bullpen arm before a starter. He came on board, and that night in Phoenix, that debut, all of a sudden he was a Hall of Famer. That wasn't predicted. I know, I lived it. I remember. Nobody thought he'd be a Cy Young. He had a pretty good pitcher, but there was questions. And you have these kids coming up, and you're thinking to yourself, I haven't seen this in a while. And to be frank, Syndergaard was acquired. They really didn't have the depth of pitching back then, where here, listening to you, Ernie, there's going to be a tough decision at some point on the veteran side or the kid side where you might have to make a deal. And I think, and I've been speaking about this for a couple of weeks, and I don't want to bring up CBA at all, but this is so important knowing that there could be some kind of roster restrictions based on payroll. Even if there's not a cap, I predict there will be some sort of penalty for teams in how they sign free agents or make trades after a certain level of payroll. They're going to have to make it just like the NBA, where, hey, you can't make this kind of free agent signing, you can't make this kind of trade. I think the timing is perfect. And I think even though Stearns denies that it played into some of their decisions this offseason about signing a veteran pitcher or bringing in a Cody Bellinger or going all in on every free agent, I think it had something to do with it. And I think he knows what he's got down there on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, that's the other thing too. I mean, obviously the Soto decision was in a different realm of consciousness, but maybe you're right as far as this offseason, all these guys with the 1 year deals or the whatever years with an opt out after this, there could be some plans, and then the Mets who have Steve Cohen money can do whatever they want. So that's why all the nonsense about Bo Bichette, good, let him have all his money. If he has a great year,
He's opting out. Yeah, he's opting
depending on the
out.
CBA, yada
Yeah,
yada, they'll
yeah.
keep him if they feel like keeping him. Same with
Sure.
Peralta. If Peralta's
Right.
100% healthy, he's got all the vibes, all the good words, leadership. He loves the Mets organization. He goes out and he's top three, top five Cy Young voting. They'll pay him depending on this, whatever that happens in the bargaining. But they can keep all these guys if they feel like it. It can happen. It's not a big deal.
And last thing before we wrap up, Nolan McClain. I don't want to jinx it. I'm knocking on a lot of wood. Got a lot of Tarik Skubal vibes, a lot of Paul Skenes vibes, a lot of Jacob deGrom vibes. I knew he would be solid. I didn't think he'd be this. I could not believe the moxie when he got called up in the middle of a pennant race. The five pitches, the six pitches, the spin, the attitude. He's got everything that makes you say that's the next dog. Right? That's the next Bulldog. That's the next Matt Harvey. That's the next DeGrom. That's the next Doc. Go on and on. One, but the part of me that says, what am I missing? 48 innings. He's still young. Hopefully he stays healthy. Am I missing anything? Are we pushing McClain at this point too far? Let's see more. Are we missing something where maybe we're overrating him a little bit?
No. So here's the thing about Nolan McClain, which is kind of funny, not funny. Obviously, I'm the minor league junkie. I've been hearing about him since he was drafted. When I started asking the highest of highest sources I have in baseball, what are your thoughts on Nolan McClain? What are your thoughts? I thought initially back in like early 2024, I thought we were looking at a guy who the hitting was never going to work. So like, no, he's not hitting for, at a certain point. We're going to cut that off. Then I thought I was told he's most likely a pen arm. Then I was like, oh, okay. But while I'm talking about him, he had some really good outings. I asked another person in 2024, what do you think of Nolan McClain? And he told me straight up, he is a dog. Buy stock in Nolan McClain. He said that in 2024 when he was a fledgling guy trying to hit double A. Who's the guy who said that? The new major league assistant pitching coach,
Dan
Dan
McKinney.
McKinney.
There you go. You can
So
reveal it now. There you
these are
go.
the guys. These relationships, the resources that they have, these guys see talent when they see talent. I'm looking at a reliever who can't hit. We're now looking at a possible top three Cy Young candidate and possible rookie of the year within 2 years. And the thing about what I was told, he's not done yet. And that's why when you're saying a reliever who now throws like up to six pitches as a starter and he's a
It's
horse.
like wiffle ball. Like I'm watching it, and I'm like, I haven't seen this kind of performance since my old days in Bent Centers playing wiffle ball and people throwing these wacky pitches. Now, maybe kids today, young people don't understand wiffle ball or even know what a wiffle ball is, but it's almost like the only pitcher I remember back in the day in the 80s and 90s, it's like David Cone when he came up and he was throwing all these, the Laredo, and he was having all this spin, and nobody talked about that before then. So, and he's got an aura, like he looks through you in a sense where he has such a high level of confidence when you hear him speak. He's playing in the WBC. Again, health is going to be big. With him and Peralta at the top of the rotation, I have to think whatever issues Manaea, Senga, Holmes, Peterson have at various points, because all of those pitchers are going to have inconsistencies. Maybe Holmes floats to the top. You could then know, hey, this series, you got McClain, you get a good outing. The pen will get rested. You got a good shot at winning. You put up a crooked number against the bad team. McClain's going to shut him down for 7 innings. You don't have to worry about messing around in BC on a Saturday afternoon. Things like that. So you just made a lot of Mets fans feel better, because the Met fan in general is like, I don't feel good about, having nice things. I don't feel good about prospects, because they always in the back of their head have Generation K. In the back of their head, they have Matt Harvey, Syndergaard. But here's the difference, and I think we could end here. I don't think the Mets had the infrastructure in 2011, 12, 13, 14, particularly after they went to the World Series in 15 and won a pennant, that they have now. They had an old school pitching coach in Dan Worthen. They had no investment in the minor league system on health and technology, and they blew a golden opportunity to have an incredible staff in 2014, 2015, my opinion. If those guys were growing up in LA, if those guys were growing up in Tampa, maybe even the Yankees. I know that makes people feel bad saying it. They might have had a different career. I'm not saying Harvey wouldn't have gotten hurt. I'm not saying Syndergaard wouldn't have got hurt. But I got to tell you, with some guidance, I don't think Syndergaard would have got hurt, because Tom House predicted Syndergaard was going to get hurt. With some guidance, I know Matt Harvey had other issues off the field. Maybe Matt Harvey's treated differently coming up. But I think the Mets have a better shot at making this stick than 1996 with Generation K and with the 2015 group.
Yeah, but again, too, I think offensively. We saw what they can do last year. Obviously, the whole season's gone because of pitcher health last year.
Right.
Now, that's not something that could hopefully not repeat to that level of breaking a franchise record for pitchers used on the active roster. But I think almost what you see is what you get, even with different hitters, because again, now you're talking about the system that the Mets now
Right.
employ that other
Right.
teams have had. Teams like the Dodgers have
Right.
had this
Sure.
forever.
Sure.
The Mets, my understanding, I've said it a bunch of times. The Mets organization, a lot of their resources to the T have really started after the 2022 draft. So, by the way, a lot of the resources the Mets have are also in the amateur levels now that they didn't have before. That's how you're going to have guys like Santucci and Benj being drafted and already at this level a year or two later, and AJ Ewing guys with the player development wise with the new swing and approach. This is what happens now with the extra resources. And by the way, they're building a super facility that I
Sure.
announced first, and then it was announced later in the public eye about the super building they're going to create at Clover Park that's minor league specific. And they already have the number one nutritional program in minor league baseball because a lot of minor leaguers kind of playfully hate their fellow Mets guys
Sure.
because of that program. Now you're adding in all the other stuff. It also can help a lot, but I think the Mets offense is going to be to the T. Benefited from the resources. And now the pitching is all about spin rate and velo. We're going to always worry about health because of even that as well. Let's be serious and honest. But I think the offense is going to be the key again, along with the obvious player health.
All right, what do you got coming up, Dernie? What's next? What can the listeners expect from you over the next couple of weeks?
The plan is to finish up my top 30 prospect list. So please tune in to the New York Mets Dove Report. Every day at this point, I got videos of every prospect. I consider it more of profiles as well. You can argue with me about how high or low I have the prospects. I'll be back at Clover Park this coming week. So hopefully be on the lookout for some of my video shorts on YouTube and also longer ones. I'll look to have more private player interviews behind the scenes that I can't film, but I'll film myself talking about those discussions with those players to continue to hype them, get as much information as I can. And by the way, this coming week on Monday, tomorrow on Monday is when the rest of the Mets minor league players officially have their report date. So now they're all going to be around starting this early by March 2nd. Everyone in the Mets organization, all my favorite prospects, will all be on one site. So I'll be stalking them as much as possible.
All right, I gave you guys a lot of Ernie Dove. I promised him 20 minutes. He gave us much more. Ernie, enjoy the rest of your weekend. You're a friend of the show. We'll be following. Let's catch up again soon, my friend.
Sounds good.
That is Ernie Dove, the great, not the good, the great Ernie Dove. Let's wrap up right after this. We're back. Final thoughts. And, you know, a lot of the mailbag that came to me this week, once everybody heard that Ernie Dove was going to be on the show, was about questions for Ernie and things. It wasn't just one person. About two or three people had reached out and said, hey, ask Ernie this, ask Ernie that, you know. And I think we covered a lot of that during his conversation. I don't want to call interviews. Ernie and I have conversations. I like saying a lot of what I do is conversations. Interviews are so formal, like a job interview, no, but not interview. We're just talking here. We're talking Mets, right? No G. But one of the things on the way out I wanted to discuss, because it was brought up by Ron Darling this weekend, was Kodai Senga. And I've been tough on Kodai Senga. And Darling talked about how Senga needs to have the rotation start to be built, not around him, not for him, but he needs to work himself into the rotation. And I've been saying something like this for a while. I mean, Senga's been around since 2023. And I think ultimately the job of Justin Willard and the Mets is to make sure that the rotation, not just Senga as a whole, are successful. And we touched on it a little bit with Ernie, and I think it's worth kind of going back into it. And the biggest question, and the Mets haven't even really talked about it, and I think knocking on a lot of wood, and I bet you David Stearns is doing the same thing every time one of his starters takes the mound, and I'm sure he'll be doing that when Nolan McLain is in the WBC. Is, you know, do you get to the last week of March when you're ready to put all your, you know, scheduled starters in some kind of order heading into opening day against the Pirates, March 26th? Is that on March 26th? Let me make sure I got the date right. And you want to make sure they're all healthy. Now, assuming they're all healthy, I still have a feeling, especially early in the year, that the Mets are going to go with six starters. And I don't think it has anything to do with Senga. I think it has more to do with wanting to possibly ease a Sean Manaea and a Kodai Senga back in there. Maybe limit the innings a little bit of a Nolan McLain. Maybe still see if, you know, Clay Holmes, who might have lost some steam there later in the second half, do you want to keep him as fresh as possible? You know, I wonder if Freddie Peralta, does he need the extra day? Does he want the extra day? I'm sure these are conversations that they're having. We're not privy to it. But also, there is a situation where, and this is where you would have an old school, and if you go back and just, you know, pick a season from the 60s, you know, you'd see guys like a Don Drysdale, Hall of Famer. They'd pitch out of the bullpen, and it wouldn't just be in an emergency. They'd have some bullpen pitching. Now, back then, you had, you know, guys who pitch on 3 days rest, and maybe they would do in some matchups or, you know, whatever it may be. But you would have guys that would pitch out of the bullpen. And you have to wonder, would you be able to look at the rotation? And I'm just speculating here. Would a Freddie Peralta, a Sean Manaea, you know, a couple of veterans, a David Peterson, three veterans, say, look, I want to be on 5 days rest. Senga wants to be on 6 days. And then you've got some kind of McLain and Holmes, some kind of hybrid. And then I don't think McLain will come out of the bullpen, but on maybe a throw day, you know, you would have to schedule it. Maybe a Holmes is part of the bullpen. And what would be interesting about that, and we've talked a little bit about this before, is that it would at least allow you potentially, and if you utilize him correctly, if you know you have him available, he's skipping a start, whatever, because he's stretched out, or there's this 2 or 3 day period as before his next start extra. He gets an extra day of rest as you try to figure out keeping the mainstay guys on normal rest that need to be on normal rest. You say, today you're available out of the bullpen. We're going to use you out of the bullpen. and here's the situations, and you find a way to get him in, and then that gives, let's say, a Luis Garcia a day off, or a Luke Weaver a day off, you know, Tobias Myers, who I think is going to be used in a multi-inning role, where you could give them an extra day. You have a guy that could give you a couple innings out of the bullpen on a throw day, instead of potentially at some time having to do the shuttle. And I think they're going to use the shuttle, and it'll be interesting because if they're going to use the shuttle, right now they only have two guys in the bullpen which who may make the roster, is Brazenbaum and Tobias Myers, who have options. So you don't have to worry about exposing them to waivers. But some of the other guys that potentially, an Austin Warren, it would have to be exposed to waivers. You know, obviously Craig Kimbrell, if he makes it, is not going to be able to, you know, he's not going to go for that. He's not going to go up and down. That's not what he's here for. Robert Stock, we mentioned him just because he had such a good outing. You know, other guys do have options like a Justin Hageman, Jonathan Pintaro, guys like that. So it'll be interesting how they play that. And I think that it might early in the year be less about Senga and more about keeping the staff fresh. And if anything, they may want to make sure that McLean is limited more so than Senga. Remember, if they're going to make a postseason run, and if they're going to have any chance at beating anybody at the top of this league, and we'll put the Dodgers there, you're going to need a healthy and fresh and effective Peralta and McLean. And if McLean is who Ernie Dove says he is, and who we think he is, and who we've seen he is, and if Peralta is the pitcher that we saw last year in Milwaukee, and then some potentially on a walk year, you go into any series, three-game series, five-game series, seven-game series, and those two guys, your Game 1 and Game 2 starters, you got a hell of a shot at bringing those games home. Now, it's still going to come down, and I always said, and that was always my impetus for signing Diaz, signing Williams, having that monster bullpen at the back end, and they may still be able to have a solid bullpen. I'm not so sure I agree with Jeff Passan, who says the Mets bullpen is their weak link. I think with some of the arms, the Rosses, the Lamberts, there may be others. You heard Ernie Dove mention a couple others. Who knows what they could do at the deadline? Bullpen arms are always accessible at the deadline. And when you have depth like the Mets do, and you saw it last summer when they got when they were able to get Soto, when they were able to get Helsley, they gave up, you know, decent prospects. Maybe nobody that'll hurt them. We'll see. But decent prospects. You could always build a bullpen. And Stearns has done, in much more dire situations, built bullpens that have at least navigated high leverage situations. And I think this bullpen will be no different, even without Diaz in the final three outs. So I think that would be more about the six-man rotation than necessarily Senga's comfort. But I agree with Darling. But at the same time, if you can make it work and you could space these guys out and you could maybe even get some bullpen utilization out of a couple of them on the throw days, I think it's better than shuttling. I don't like shuttling. I don't think it's good for the player going up and down. Nothing bothers me than to get a guy that pitches well and then you lose him to waivers. I mean, if you think back in the day, a name that the Mets regret exposing to waivers because of a shuttle situation was Darren O'Day, who went out to have a really good career, was a reliever they plucked off of Rule 5, and then they exposed him after a couple of weeks in the big leagues in April because they needed a starter. And away you go. You never know who you lose that could be a solid arm. And if you could avoid the shuttling, especially after, 46 pitches last year, that'd be great. So some final thoughts on the way out. I thought it was a conversation worth having, especially after what Darling and the Booth had talked about this past weekend. So, all right, that's it. Thanks for joining in to this edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. And you could join me at the new and improved talkingmetspodcast.com. Chat for free. Premium content, updates on the show, interact with me, all at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. It's your hub. If you want updates, it's your hub. And I want to thank, as I always do, the good folks at the Believe Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Join up for extra innings, some great content we've been doing during the week. Till then, take care, everybody.